Welcome back to this Occupy Calgary versus the Street Church edition of Gospel Road. We continue with our talk with Art Pawlowski of Street Church and Jim Blake, National Chairman of Concerned Christians Canada. Art, what does the inaction of the City of Calgary imply for the future of court battles for the Street Church ahead?
Well, I believe it proves our point. I believe that if we will be able to stand before any reasonable judge that is not biased, we will be able to prove that what we were saying all along, it's the truth. City is picking and choosing who they bless and who they curse, sort of speak. But, you know, when I was listening to this UN document and your interpretation, you know, it fits perfectly well. A future without Jesus, a future without God, Judeo-Christian values, I think that's what I see. I think those people truly would like to see their truth. What is truth? Jesus said, the truth will set you free, and if it's not his truth, then whose it is? Mr. Nenshi's truth? Because you know what? He is like you. He is just a sinner that needs Jesus Christ. He needs to repent from his sins, turn away from his wickedness, and ask the Savior into his life, and the truth will set him free. Yeah, so it worries me, right, that if they are coming with their ideas and they say, no, we don't like this God thing, that's a huge problem, because this nation was built upon the Word of God. I believe this nation was blessed because God himself, Jesus Christ, chose to bless the land and the people that loved him and built this nation.
And truly, actually, I don't think that it's that he particularly has a problem with the God thing. It's that he has a problem with the God of the Bible, because they were allowing the protesters of Occupy Calgary to have a Buddhist religious ceremony in the lobby. So clearly he doesn't have a problem with religious ceremonies, just, well, it seems that the city clearly has a problem with Christian religious ceremonies in the public.
And I think you, Jim, you're right, because we invited Mr. Mayor for the March for Jesus this year, and we send an invitation, and he would not even reply. But then, in the same breath, sort of speak, he would come to the religious service of Muslims. He would attend as a chair homosexual parade. So I'm asking a simple question. Is he a mayor for all of us, or just for some? Mm-hmm. Because I don't like my mayor to be a mayor just for some.
No.
Well, especially when he's indicated that he's the mayor for all Calgarians.
Yeah, but you know, when we look at the track record. Yeah. The track record speaks totally opposite.
Mm-hmm. They had this Tibetan service with a ringing bowl and everything in the lobby with cross-legged and in their positions for the rituals.
The meditation and all that.
Now, I understand that you'd like to see Christians glorify the Lord Jesus there in that same spot.
Well, you know, if there is a change in the climate at City Hall, I think, you know, it should apply to everyone, and if now it's okay to have religious services in the lobby at City Hall during the week, then it, why not Christian services? Why not have, in fact, this Tuesday, we're going to press the point and see if perchance this is going to be equally applied, or if it's going to be restricted only to Buddhist ceremonies or whichever ones they prefer, but not to Christian ceremonies. So we're going to actually have a Bible study, and we're going to have a worship session at the bottom of the escalator in the very same spot that Occupy Calgary had their Tibetan worship service there. And we'll just see, once again, are we going to have a different treatment relating to the treatment of Christian services versus the treatment of, you know, the Tibetans?
So this is going to be on Tuesday?
Tuesday at City Hall at 12 o'clock noon. So if anybody wants to come and join the service, they're welcome to come.
You know, I wonder where the nativity scene is going to end up this year. Last year, it ended up in the back of the atrium across from the entrance to the men's washroom.
Oh.
And then there was complaints, and it got moved up to the front. But rather interesting placement there of our fundamental historical beliefs.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is our time. If Christians will not wake up right now, we may not have our constitutional rights in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a saying, use your rights, use it or lose it. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the wake-up call for all of us, because it seems like everyone is welcome to do whatever they want to do it, except Christians.
Now, Art, you had an opportunity to actually speak with the Occupy Calgary protesters down on Olympic Plaza. What did you find out from them? What was their response to you?
You know, I want to be clear here with your listeners. I'm not against the protesters. I believe that they can and they should exercise their rights. That's what I fight for all those years, for the equal rights for everyone. So I'm not against the protests. I'm not against the occupied Calgary protesters. I just simply want to show the unequal application of the law, the bias from the city councillors, the bias from the law department and the bylaw department. So I did hang around with the protesters quite often, even yesterday, and what I have seen is the very same things that I was charged with. They are doing. Over 10 bylaws were broken yesterday while I was there and the police was there, and no tickets, no harassment, no intimidation, no threats, no legal battles that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, like in our case. No. They are exercising their rights. So what they are demanding is strange. One person I talked to, he says, well, we want millions of things to change. And if they will not change them, I will be camping here for decades. Like, it didn't satisfy me at all. Right?
millions of things.
What? So I talked to another person, and, you know, they are throwing those cliches, you know, the rich, we will eat the rich and all that stuff. And, you know, I start to wonder, what is going on here? There are no real demands. There are people that don't have a clue really what they are fighting for. And yet, in our case, we stood for the homeless. We stood for the rights of the homeless, rights of the Christians. The message is very clear, and we face the harassment, the wrath of the government, and we have been portrayed as a lawbreaker. So clearly, I've seen, even yesterday, a double standard.
Now, Jim, we had the case, you mentioned Corey Morgan, who parked November 6th his truck down on the plaza. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, on the 6th, he drove in, and he was trying to make a point, and I think that he did make it, and that was that basically he wanted to see if, in fact, that the bylaws would be enforced against him when they had yet to be enforced against Occupy Calgary for, at that point, over 3 weeks of occupation of Olympic Plaza. And what he found was that, in fact, they were quick to apply the bylaws to him. And yet he was having a protest as well, and Mayor Nenshi made it very clear that they couldn't touch the protesters in Olympic Plaza with Occupy Calgary because it would have infringed on their constitutional and charter rights. And I think that's very high and lofty to say that kind of thing, but then when you have another protester who's having a counter-protest and trying to make a point of the fact that the bylaws have not been properly applied, and will that apply to all Calgarians or simply the Occupy Calgary group? And I think that he demonstrated very clearly that with the $200 worth of fines and the immediate removal of his vehicle on a flatbed trailer for a $200 impound fee, so at a total of over $400 worth of cost, I think he found out that, in fact, you know, Mayor Nenshi's lofty statements about the protection of the charter rights of people, of citizens, and the importance of not coming against the charter by imposing bylaws against a lawful protest, I think kind of go out the window.
Well, what brand of truck was it? Maybe that was the problem.
No, it could be. Maybe he didn't like it.
The color was wrong.
Oh, it wasn't purple.
It wasn't purple.
Well, yes. And now, I'd like you to share with you a clip of Toronto activist Dave Meslin, who was invited by the mayor's civic committee to kick off with Nenshi the Three Things for Calgary campaign at the John Dutton Theatre at Castell Library. After we hear the clip, I want your reactions, Art and Jim. Mm-hmm. So now, Dave, here's a notice that's on the Civic Camp website. Dave Meslin's event with Mayor Nenshi is sold out, but Dave has graciously agreed to set aside time to meet and chat with civic campers at the area in Inglewood. He's full of energy and creative ideas, and he's eager to talk with us about his challenges and success. Then Friday, October 21st at noon, due to overwhelming demand we have created a waiting list for this event. Now, this is the lobby group creating a waiting list for a city-sponsored event. Civic Calgary is creating the waiting list for it. Register here to place your name on the wait list for a free ticket. Dave Meslin calls himself a community choreographer, and others call him a rabble-rouser. Call him what you will, the Toronto activist and co-editor of Local Motion has a perspective on citizen engagement that is boisterous, contagious, and downright provocative. Forthright, now this is the Civic Camp announcement, forthright and occasionally provocative himself, Mayor Nenshi believes passionately in grassroots community engagement and regularly challenges Calgarians to stand up, speak out, and do more for their city. Together, Dave Meslin and Mayor Nenshi will help kick off Three Things for Calgary, an initiative of the Mayor's Civic Engagement Committee, by sharing their unique insights into citizen involvement. Creative, funny, and insightful, this conversation is guaranteed to make you think of civic engagement in a whole new light. Well, it's very interesting. Dave Meslin, spring of 1997, at age 22, moved downtown in Toronto to get away from Mel Lastman, he says, the mayor of North York at the time. He spent 3 years working at Dormouse Distribution, a magazine middleman that puts up titles about alternative health, sexuality, and politics, including Adbusters on shelves across Canada. Now, he was involved in part parade, part street theater, the demonstrations he designed to challenge the supremacy of the automobile. In all, he organized 3 protests, but it was the final one. Now, this is from 2006, so he may have done stuff in between. Held in the May of 2000 was the most memorable. 250 marchers began at the CN Tower and slowly walked up the center of York Street, blocking traffic and earning the ire of afternoon commuters. The group ended up across from the Stock Exchange. A DJ set up turntables, and soon the assembled activists and neo-hippies were dancing in the middle of the street until the cops confiscated audio cables and silenced the party. He doesn't say anything about taking their Bibles away. Mm. After doggedly negotiating with local police, Meslin was able to secure an hour of electricity, provided no windows were smashed. Mm. Interesting. Here they are in the middle of the street, downtown Toronto. This was, after all, only 6 months after the so-called battle in Seattle, where protesters had effectively shut down a World Trade Organization meeting, and the street was returned to the same condition the activists found it in. Having arrived at a gentleman's agreement, the police officer asked, "Mr. Meslin, are there any other surprises I should know about?" "No, this is it," Meslin replied. "We're just hanging out." At which point, a flatbed truck full of sod appeared on a side street. Before Meslin could do or say anything, a bucket brigade formed, and a significant portion of York Street was covered with a carpet of grass. The delivery was engineered by the late Tucker Gomberg, a longtime environmental activist and mayor's candidate in 2000. For Meslin, it was a dream event. A large patch of public space was reclaimed without permission. No one was arrested. No one was hurt, he said, and we danced on the grass in front of the Stock Exchange. The symbolism was really powerful. Let's hear that clip from Dave Meslin at the John Dutton Library in Calgary.
Thanks. Great to be here. It's kind of freaked me out for a second. There's such an amazing energy in the city right now, and it's great to be here and witness it. I was hanging out with the folks from Civic Camp last night. And it's an honor to be a part of what's unfolding in Calgary. So thanks for having me. About 10 years ago, I was doing a lot of community organizing around the theme of public space and reclaiming public spaces. And we were doing symbolic activities such as guerrilla gardening, where you're vandalizing public space with nature. They call them orphan spaces, public spaces that aren't being used in any useful way. It could be an abandoned parking lot or some strange corner. And planting things. Obviously not a revolutionary act, not going to transform a city overnight, but it does a few important symbolic things, which I'll touch on in a moment. Another similar thing we did was called the Downtown Defense Project. Defense meaning taking down fences, D/fence. We're going to remove fences because fences create obviously a barrier between neighbors, although there's a saying that, the good fences make good neighbors, something like that. I don't agree with that. I suppose it depends on your neighbor. But more importantly, we were focusing on the fence between your lawn and the street for those who have front yard fences, because that's creating a barrier between you and the rest of the city, delineating the space that I'm going to claim responsibility up into the sidewalk, and the rest of it someone else is going to take care of. Don't worry about my space. I won't worry about yours. Completely disavowing ourselves of any collective responsibility of what lies beyond that fence, which is the public space. And the reason we did activities like this, besides the fact that it was really fun, both planting illegal stuff at night and sneaking out and vandalizing with nature, and taking down fences is really fun. There's sparks flying and people are learning how to use power tools. And it was all volunteer driven. We would actually put signs up on fences saying, "Hey, do you want your fence taken down? Here's a before and after picture of how it looks. An open community and a fence community. Why do you have a prison yard in front of your house?" we'll take it down for free. And sure enough, people call and say, yeah, I never thought about it. It was here when I bought the house, or I needed it for a dog or a child, and they've both either grown up or moved out. Well, the child, the dogs don't move out. take down the fence. And then I do another call saying, who wants to learn how to use like grinders and power tools and sawzalls? And people sign up, and we rip the fence down, and it's a lot of fun. And what it does is it suddenly triggers something in your mind that the world around us is malleable, which is something that many of us don't firmly believe in our heart. And it allows us, once you have that opening in your mind, to suddenly take an ownership over public space, a collective ownership. So the exhibit that I'm doing, called The Fourth Wall, is putting forward concrete ideas. We're trying to identify what are those barriers. How can we take down that wall where politicians can more easily access people, but also the people can more easily access the system and want to access the system and feel invited to access the system. Examples from the show. We're actually putting forward 36 concrete recommendations. Some of them are kind of silly. Some are very serious. Some are directed towards the provincial government, some towards the municipal. And I'll just run through a few quickly. Number one, we have to redesign our public notices. So for those of you who've seen my TED Talk, you've seen me complain about these. These are a total waste of money. If we're going to design a public notice like this, you might as well not spend the money at all. I mean, no one's ever... I doubt that in the history of the universe, anyone has ever gone to a public consultation meeting because they saw an ad like this. The address of the building it's related to is halfway down, and the font size is, I don't know, 7 or 8 maybe? 7? I mean, I can barely read it, and it's right in front of my face here. So this is supposedly designed to inform citizens that there might be a substantial change in your neighborhood, and your voice matters. And, you know, the wisdom of the community should be driving our development plans. So come out to a meeting. It's a joke. And you know, cities have design staff. Like, they know how to design things when they want to. It almost feels like it's some kind of intentional exclusion. Now, to be fair, there are restrictions from provincial planning acts. So in Ontario, there's regulations that almost pretty much say, you know, this has to look ugly. And so city staff have been quite defensive in Toronto, saying, we saw your TED Talk, we totally agree with you, but we're restricted. And my response to them has been, have two signs. Have two heads. Do the official one and put the other one beside it. And the example I offer them is drug companies are highly regulated, especially in the U.S. Here, I think they can barely advertise at all. But there, they can advertise, but they have to do all this legal mumbo-jumbo that lists all the side effects, and there's a lot of side effects to these things. So it usually takes up an entire page. And you've seen these. They put them on the back. So you have your whole legal mumbo-jumbo page, and then the other side, you have your sexy ad. It's like, take this pill, and you'll be really happy, and your life will be amazing. So they do their marketing side and the legal side. So fine, you know, if you have to run this ad, run it, although I really think they should reform those rules, and then do a sexy ad beside it that says, hey, we want to hear from you. And we did an open call for submissions in Toronto asking designers to redesign the public notice. If your goal was to actually maximize participation at these events, how would you design it? And so part of the show is showing all these amazing examples of how a public notice from the government could look. We talked in the exhibit about how we can reach younger people and make sure that when people leave the education system, they're not just being trained to be good employees in the workforce, they're being trained to be good citizens. I don't think we have enough civics education in our elementary school or high school system in Ontario. I don't know how it works here. We definitely don't have a city hall school in our city hall, and I'm very inspired by the one you have here in Calgary. We have a half course in grade 10 called civics that tries to cover municipal, provincial, federal, and global topics as well in a half course. It's impossible. And of course, provincial and federal will always overshadow municipal. And for some reason, it's in the history section. Talk about sending the wrong message. Civics is all about one thing, which is changing the present, changing the future. If there's one section that shouldn't be in, it's history. It's crazy, because history is all about things that you obviously can't change, unless you're Doctor Who. Lowering the voting age to 16. I think that's something we should look at, not just because 16-year-olds are smart enough and responsible enough. I mean, they can drive, they can be in the Canadian Reserves, but it would overlap high school with voting. I think it's kind of weird to say, well, we think you're too dumb to vote, but let's tell you how the system works. Here's a civics course, but, you know, it's I think people would take civics more seriously if we respected their intelligence in the first place. Okay, then we talk about the philosophical idea of elevating the citizenry. How do we get citizens to see themselves as being what they're supposed to be, which is the driving democratic force of our entire political system? We're supposed to be at the top, and the politicians serve those who place them there. So one thing I think we should do is completely retire the title of his or her worship. I think it really sends the wrong message. I mean, how could we possibly convince people that they're the supreme voice and they're the most important voice when we're calling the mayor this, like, godly title? I think if we're going to raise people up, we need to take mayors off their pedestal. And not, I'm not saying that they put themselves there, and I'm hoping that the mayor of Calgary might take the lead on this and come up with a new term. Actually, he came up with one. I forget what it was. He had a silly term.
You're a super-duper magical worship.
You're super-duper magical worship. Okay, I think if it has those prefixes, I think it works out. And let's also look at what we name things after. I don't know what the trend is in Calgary. In Toronto, we actually did this really funny panel in the exhibit where we took footprints of landmarks using Google Earth and stacked them up in these virtual jars and compared the square footage of what we've named after corporations, what we've named after philanthropists, what we've named after politicians, which means politicians usually naming things after themselves, and what we've named after community leaders, citizens who led in their community who weren't elected and weren't wealthy. And it's staggering to see these stacks. Like the politician one is this huge tower because there's an airport in there. They're big. It blows my mind that we've reached a point in our culture where Mel Lastman, the mayor of North York 15 years ago, named the square in front of City Hall after himself, Mel Lastman Square, while he was mayor. Find me any other system where the servant who's hired to do something names the whole place after themselves. Like, we've completely lost track of what this system's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be all the time about us. And these people are in these chairs temporarily to represent our views. Let's have public polls. If we're going to name something after someone, an airport, a park, a golf course, throw it open to the public. Who do they want to name it after? It's their space. I own that airport. I own these streets. I own these parks. Right? Okay. Here's a quick one. I think we should hold our elections on the weekend. Every event organizer knows that if you want to maximize public participation in a big event to get everyone out, you do it on the weekend. Everyone knows that. So we have this panel where we stack up all the major Toronto events that happen on a weekend, which is about, like, I don't know, a whole bunch, with their logos, and all the major public events we hold on a weekday, which is one, our election. Montreal and Vancouver both hold their municipal elections on the weekend. And it's a class issue, too, because the people who are least able to vote on a weekday because they're stuck between two jobs and three kids and no babysitter, well, who's that? Let's look at having meetings in the evening more often, so people who work 9 to 5 can actually attend and make sure they can make a submission. I don't know how your schedule works here with meetings, but very often in Toronto, they don't use timed items enough. You don't know when your item's going to come up. So if you want to make a speech about a certain development in your neighborhood, you have to be there at 9 a.m., and they might not speak at it until 3. And you can bet that developer can afford to have a lobbyist or a lawyer waiting all day. But maybe you can't wait all day. So using timed items, having childcare available at meetings where you know there's going to be a big turnout. Having snacks and beverages at meetings. People, meetings go much better when you feed people. And promoting meetings with good design, plain language, and translations in neighborhoods where it's appropriate. Let's also look at breaking down municipal governance into smaller pieces. And as cities grow, your city's growing, our city's stupidly large, 2.5 million people now. You look at cities like New York, like Montreal, like Portland and LA, and they've come up with really creative ways to break it down into smaller sections. You still have your larger government. Montreal has borough councils with separate councillors, separate mayors that oversee local issues that just relate to neighborhoods. I was going to mention also that I brought nicer clothes to wear. I brought these really nice pants. I'm wearing jeans now and these nice, like, shiny shoes and stuff. And then I was thinking that, you know, I think we have to dress down politics a bit. Right? If we want to bring politics to people and get the average people involved, we need to dress down and not just use plain language in our writing, but use plain everything, like plain clothes. The mayor in Toronto, Mayor Rob Ford, he's been caught a few times walking around town wearing a football jacket. And people have criticized him for it. It's not professional. It doesn't meet his senior royal worshipness. I think it's amazing. I think it's so cool that we have a mayor who sometimes wears a football jacket. And we needed his inaugural speech a year ago. He was introduced by Don Cherry. Now, I didn't like everything Don Cherry said. He was actually quite polarizing and divisive, but I liked the idea. Well, I guess that's his thing. But the idea that this hockey coach, commentator dude would introduce the mayor, I thought was fantastic. What a great way to get people to connect, you know, the things they care about and are interested in with City Hall. We need to do more of that. We need to dress down politics and hold public consultations in restaurants, bars, and bowling alleys. It's really about making it relevant to people's lives and connecting the things in their day-to-day life with municipal governance. I'm going to tell you a very quick story because I have 2.5 minutes left. I was speaking to some high school students a few years ago and talking about all this stuff, politics, involvement, engagement, and they were kind of dozing off. They had other things on their mind. They were tired. They didn't choose to be there as you have here today. They were forced to listen to me. And some of them were kind of falling over. And then I tried a different approach. I said, well, what do you guys care about? What do you want to change? There must be something you're angry about. And of course, they're shy, so the hands didn't go up at first. And then a hand went up, and this guy said, hats. I was like, hats? What about hats? Well, we're not allowed to wear hats. This is an injustice. We're really upset. And I spent the next 20 minutes with them talking about this, and they were all, suddenly their eyes were opening up. I was like, well, you could fight this, you know? And of course, the teachers who invited me were like in the back, like kind of squirming. But I said, have you ever thought about fighting it? And they were like, they hadn't, of course, because they don't see the world as malleable, right? We know our living rooms are malleable. We know our bedrooms are malleable. They had never thought that it could change. This evil administrator somewhere, you know, had made this rule and they won't listen to us because they're evil. And I was like, chances are they thought it was a good idea for your safety to do it, that it was for your benefit. Maybe you could convince them otherwise. Have you done research? I'll bet there's a master's thesis written on the topic of whether dress codes actually impact dropout rates and marks and student violence and all this stuff. If you can find evidence that wearing hats or not doesn't impact the goals that the administration was trying to get, and you developed some literature and had a petition and called the media and did a press conference, the media would show up. And I'll tell you what, if you asked for a meeting with the principal at that point, you would get one. And you might not win, but they would meet with you, and you might actually get them to try a pilot project where one day a month is hat day. And then you can measure whether, you know, how things went on that day. And they were just all over it, because suddenly I was talking about their lives. And what's really exciting about this project we're launching today is that it's all about that. Three things for Calgary is about getting people not to listen to what the mayor's agenda is for the next 3 years, but asking them, what's your agenda? What do you want to do? And how are you going to try and move that forward? I was speaking last night to some folks at the Civic Camp event, and I met this interesting guy, Doug Martinson. And what he does is he helps companies figure out how to crowdsource intelligence from their employees. The message, you know, very simple, that if you want to run an innovative company, you can't just do it from the top. The people at the bottom are actually doing a lot of the work. They might have amazing ideas. How do we crowdsource that information? And I think we need to take that same idea back into politics and create a culture where everyone accepts, from the media to the politicians to staff and to us, that the real way that we make cities innovative is by getting people speaking louder and going into their own hearts saying, what do I want for my neighborhood, for my street, for my park? So I'm really honored and excited to be here to help launch three things, because I think that's exactly what it does. It's a crowdsourcing initiative to tap into the wisdom of the city. So thank you very much.
I'd like to invite Dave and the mayor to take place on the stage, and we can start our Q&A. I invite the mayor to ask the first question when he comes up, but we do have volunteers circulating in the room with cards and pens.
Dave Meslin down at the library, but he clearly endorses the Occupy as far as something would be in line with his past activities of reclaiming. He has this idea also of tearing down fences, asking people to take down their fences in their front yards because it's indicative that they don't care about the public space and other such things. Art, do you have a response to that? here's a Toronto activist that's launching a campaign for the mayor that's done Occupy public space events in the past.
Yeah, no, you see, you know, that just proves the point. Like, for the years, we are organizing March for Jesus. We pay about $10,000 to pay for the fees to get the police, you know, road closures and stuff like that. And I'm looking at the occupied protesters. They do a march, no bill. They occupied public space, no charges. Next year, I'm thinking I'm going to just encourage Christians to march without paying off all the fees. Why should we? You know, I guess that's what the city wants. They want us to be passionate. We are very passionate about Jesus Christ, and we want to have the same treatment. It's absolutely ridiculous, you know, what I'm hearing right now here.
It's discouraging because you got a radical that's launching it, and then the mayor's civic camp is very highly involved in this at a noon hour rally, which most working people couldn't get to. Students could get there, activists and maybe university professors could get there. Is it right for the mayor to put a lobby group into position in City Hall like this, as far as being able to fill the seats? And
you know,
it makes you wonder.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, just for listeners to know, we tried to sit down with Mayor Nahid Nenshi for over a year. We sent number of letters to him asking for the meeting. Let's sit down. Let's talk about the issues. You know what? Not once he was willing to sit down and do it.
No,
he would brush it off to his bureaucrats. He's not willing to sit down. He's not willing to talk. He's very selective. You know, I'm a Christian, so I guess I'm not in the inner circle of Mr. Nahid Nenshi.
We'll now have a last word from our sponsors before we close up the show.
So long way short is we're working on it. I actually really believe that the City Hall atrium is Calgary's living room. I always call it that. And we need to make it open for people to be able to use in a more thoughtful way. The same way I believe, by the way, riffing off our previous conversation, that Olympic Plaza is Calgary's front lawn. And citizens have a right to their front lawn. All citizens have a right to their front lawn. And it's funny, so the number of people who've talked to me in the last couple of days who said, the Occupy people, Calgary people need to get off Olympic Plaza so that all citizens can have rights to their front lawn. And I say, okay, so all citizens except the ones you don't like should have right to the front lawn. Because all means all.